spend the night together. They said we were too young. Our kind of love was no fun. But our love comes from above.
Do it.
Let's make love.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 617-627-3800 is the telephone number. 617-627-3800. Coming up later tonight, we're going to take a look at what's happening in Brazil with the Olympics and with the government and with all of the many, many, many bad things.
Yeah, it's like a soap opera going on over there.
That are happening in Brazil right now.
Just keeps getting worse and worse.
We also have breaking news on the Zika virus, which we will get to in just a minute. And by the way, I need to point out that you can stay in touch with us all week long.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just have to spend Wednesdays with us. You can get pleasant little reminders.
You don't get enough of us for 2 hours.
You get pleasant little reminders of us every Monday through Friday. Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. I don't want to toot my own horn, although I love to do that, because because I am the greatest ever.
Are you?
Yes.
Please enlighten me on how you are the greatest ever.
I have Pope-like infallibility and Trump-like humility. Those are the two. Those are the two defining aspects of my personality. But if you follow us, if you have the Big Picture in your Facebook feed, which you should, you would have gotten the Zika story before CNN. You would have gotten the Zika story before CBS. You would have gotten it before Drudge Report. You would have gotten it as soon as USA Today dropped it today.
Because you are that good.
I don't do it all the time.
No, when we say it so many times, you know, we don't put up all day, you know, every day, just random stories that aren't relevant to you. We're going to put up... You post one of the most important stories you're going to read during the day. And sometimes we're a little ahead of the curve.
One story very thoughtfully and carefully chosen every morning from what's out there will find its way into your Facebook feed. And it is a story that you should absolutely read. We had great traction today on the thing about Apple, which we're going to be talking about.
We did.
In a little bit.
And I actually didn't even share that, which is because I have far more friends than you.
You know.
So I feel like, you know, not to toot my own horn, but when I repost something, we get more views.
I shared it because I got an alert from Facebook telling me it was blowing up. And I said, oh, let me throw this on my timeline and get it out there even more, because this is a story people care about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a story that most people aren't going to see unless somebody puts it in front of them. It's out there, but it's so far below the fold that unless you're really looking for it, you're not going to go find it.
Now, Derek, you're assuming that people are reading a newspaper.
That's the kind of, well, even on the web, it can be below the fold.
Mm-hmm.
We use that term in web design, because if you're not on the screen when people log in, you're below the fold. And that was a pretty deeply buried story today.
And very important.
Very important. Probably one of the more important stories next to the Zika thing, which will hit as soon as Lisa stops boring us with whatever happened in local news.
Well, Derek, In local news, we learned Verizon's expansion of Fios to Boston may be delayed due to corporate greed. About 39,000 Verizon landline and cable workers on the East Coast walked off the job Wednesday morning, including more than 5,000 in Massachusetts, a day after the telecommunications giant announced a $300 million investment to bring high-speed fiber optic Fios internet and TV service to Boston. The strike employees, who have been working without a contract for nearly 8 months, says Verizon wants to freeze pensions, make layoffs easy, and rely more on contract workers. The telecom giant has said there are healthcare issues that need to be addressed from retirees and current workers because medical costs have grown the company too far, and also want greater flexibility in managing its workers. The employees who walked off included repairmen, installation, customer service representatives, I can get through this, and other service workers for Verizon Wireless Business and Wireline, which also provides fixed line for services for Fios service. Yeah, and I think it's the cold medicine getting to me there.
The phrase stay of execution comes to mind when I think of the people in Boston not getting Fios earlier than they're going to get it. You're not missing out on anything, kids. Fios subscriber, I hate it.
You know what? Verizon has had many strikes within the past few years, last one being 2011. I think they striked for, it was about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The year before that, they were on strike for 2 months.
I want to say there was one more recent than that because I drive by.
That was, they were saying they were going to and it didn't. I believe that might have been with the cell service and the actual Verizon stores where you go and get your cell phone.
No, because I drive by one of their dispatch centers and I see them out striking every time they're striking. And yeah. I saw them this morning and it occurred to me that it was maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. Was the last time I saw them. So.
No, and I mean, I have a little intel with this story just because my uncle actually works for them. He has worked there for over, I want to say, almost 20 years. His father had worked for them for over 30 years. This is a company that typically you stay with for a long period of time because the benefits were so good. I use the word were because now we are getting into a day and age where companies do not want to pay for things. When we start hearing about freezing pensions, Derek, if I'm right, now pensions are what you pay into. So I take my money and I pay into a company. Thus, at the end, when I retire, I have money to fall back on.
If you want to preserve the pensions, please die. That's the problem that we have. People are living too long. Mm-hmm. Because when these pension plans were created 20, 30 years ago, they had a bunch of actuaries who were very smart people who were good with data sitting around saying, everyone's going to be dead by 70, 72, 75. That's all you need. So you got to fund them for 5 to 7 years.
So when we talk about having a lifetime health care, it's not really a big deal when you're thinking about, you know, maybe he's retiring at 60 years old. We only had to pay for 12 more years until he's dead.
Now, here we are in 2016. Everybody lives to be 80, 85. You know, people regularly make 90 these days. Mm-hmm. And it is murdering the pension system because they weren't designed to provide income for people for 25 or 30 years. And that's one part of the problem that they have. The other problem, which is shared with everybody, is the skyrocketing cost of healthcare, which until someone in Washington sits down and figures out a way to control the healthcare cost, not by making everyone in America buy insurance, mm-hmm. because as we've explained many times on this show, that does nothing to control costs.
And look at one of the studies that I brought up, it was either a week ago or 2 weeks ago, in Blue Cross Blue Shield recently did a study in saying people are actually far more sick than we intended and premiums are skyrocketing. Your affordable care isn't affordable. People are not able to get on this system because it costs too much.
Right.
So it's easier to actually take at the end of the year when you do your taxes, take the hit, get penalized, than to actually put in money and get health care every month. That's crazy.
When you think about the tens of thousands of connections to people's homes and the hundreds of thousands of miles of wire that Verizon is responsible for just here in Massachusetts, they do a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
I will give them credit for keeping the service running and being responsive to service problems. I can complain all day about their on-demand. And if Verizon needs a little bit of extra money to pay their people, they might consider putting programs on demand the next day, like every other cable provider in the country does, instead of saying, well, we're going to put it on the next day unless it's going to be on again tonight, and then we're not going to put it on until it's not going to be on again. So instead of coming home the day after The People versus OJ and watching it at 8 o'clock at night, I can watch it at 1 in the morning because mm-hmm. that's when FX decided to put it on that night. No, that's not working for me. That's not what I'm paying for.
But I mean, we are not talking about a company that doesn't have any money. This is corporate greed 101. You have a company that not only, and I don't want to hear the BS about pensions and not being able to pay out. We are talking about a multi-billion dollar company that is continually growing. So we're not just talking about, you know, the changing times of technology and landlines aren't as useful as they are now today. How much money does Verizon bring in its telecom and wireless?
They're separate units. They negotiate the contracts separately.
But it's the same company.
It does, but it doesn't matter.
The bottom line is the same company.
But that doesn't matter. And that's a naive read of what's going on here. That's the sort of take on this that gets people in trouble, because while the money may ultimately all flow up and be managed by the same board of directors, Verizon is actually broken off into self-contained units.
Mm.
Okay, so the internet and cable division has nothing to do with the wireless division, has nothing to do with whatever other divisions.
And no, and being employed doesn't mean that you are being employed by Verizon Wireless when you are employed by Verizon Landlines.
Right.
I understand that, but we're all working under the same company here. And I'm sure funds can flow in and out. But when you come out and
that's where I have to stop you and say not necessarily. I don't know the full inner workings of how Verizon is structured.
Okay, so not necessarily. So I'm not completely knocking it down.
But I know.
But when you come back and say,
I know this, that in a typical corporate structure, when you have siloed business units like that, you cannot take money from column A and put it in column B. Each one of those business units has its own what are known as P&Ls, profit and loss statements and requirements.
But also when you have a situation where apparently this aspect of the company, this division, is so strapped for cash, shouldn't there be money? Shouldn't that happen?
Not necessarily. Because,
but could it happen?
It could.
There's a possibility.
It could happen, but it would be a bad business decision to do that. Because typically you're dealing with two different realities, because the wireless business tends to be very profitable, lower infrastructure. The home internet and broadband business is less profitable, very high infrastructure.
No, of course, and that's why they're trying to change with the times and putting together like they are with the $300 million deal going into Boston, because a lot of people in Boston do want Fios.
Right.
It was one of the biggest things when I was living up on the North Shore and getting it in Danvers, and people went crazy.
Yeah, then you find out you can't get on demand until 4 days later, and you're like, bring back Comcast.
Exactly, and I understand when we talk about, you know, a service like having a landline, who has them anymore? It's an industry that essentially every day is being transformed by technology, and you have a good chunk of people that are trying to preserve that. You know, how often do you see, Derek, somebody up on a line in a bucket fixing the phone lines?
Oh, every like second or third day you see that.
Really?
Yeah.
I very, very rarely see that, because the majority of everything is done underground now.
Where you
and
live.
And it's a completely...
Where you live in the city, all of the lines are underground.
But I'm on the North Shore a good...
But you're in the North Shore after business hours. Where I am, out on the sort of on the North Shore, but out in the suburbs, you see those guys all the time. There is always wire work that needs to be done. Always. Would it be more efficient to put those lines underground? Yes, it probably would. Would it be ferociously and prohibitively expensive to do that?
Absolutely.
Yes, it would. All of this has sort of been glommed on to existing infrastructure.
Now, when you talk about and giving the reason why it is becoming so difficult for them to pay these pensions, We have a situation, though, where they're coming out and saying we're completely freezing them. There is no negotiations going on. And I, you know, I'm not in the boardroom where these negotiations are going on, so I don't know the conversation in saying I'm sure you have a group of union workers that are very, you know, holding on what they believe and what they want. On the other side, you have all your corporate people saying, well, no, this is it, or you can walk. They've trained people. They have people to work. I understand that. It's not a good look from a marketing standpoint or a PR standpoint coming out and having, you know, how many people? 5,000 in Massachusetts alone. Talking about 39,000 just on the Eastern Seaboard. You had Bernie Sanders out in Brooklyn today talking to these workers.
Bernie's looking for them votes on next
He's
Tuesday.
Really
Bernie's
pushing.
Bernie's working like crazy for them votes. You can't reduce it simply to corporate greed. There are a lot of factors. There are a lot of factors in play here.
Of course, they don't want to pay it.
It's not necessarily a question of whether or not they want to pay it. It's a question of whether they can pay it. And this is where you can't automatically side with labor.
Derek, I'm not talking about a company that... This doesn't happen so much because every couple years we are hearing about it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing.
It's because they've been kicking the can down the road instead of addressing the fundamental problem. That's where this comes from. And at the end of the day, when this is done, the unions are going to have to make some concessions in getting what they want. And Verizon is going to have to make some concessions in how it allocates its money. The alternative is a lot of people lose their jobs. And those who are left have to pick up the slack for that and work twice as hard for what is basically a small incremental raise in pay. Mm-hmm. Both sides know what's at stake here. And, you know, if we were talking about the greedy robber barons who are like, oh, we'll just throw these employees out and get new ones. You know, here's what you won't see Verizon doing. Verizon's not going to try and break the strike. Verizon's not going to bring in scabs. They did that once before, and that didn't work out terribly well for them.
They already have. You have the spokesperson, Rich Young. He actually came out and said, we've trained thousands of people. So, I mean, they already have workers in place
to say
none of your services will be disrupted. They're already trained, ready to go.
That's also a blanket threat out of the strike-breaking playbook that every company uses to try and frighten its workers into ending the strike. And yes, they have to keep the service running. And they may have a few technicians floating around in case something major happens.
A little more difficult if you are having problems with your Fios. Yes.
Yeah.
But there are still going to be workers that will be there to come to your house and fix it.
Yeah. And everybody who's on the picket lines now will have a job waiting when this is done. You know, it is a complicated negotiation, and what I don't like to see is that complicated negotiation broken down to, oh, this is just corporate greed. It's not. There is more going on here. Part of the problem is that people are living too damn long. If everybody over the age of 60
I just don't understand how you can say it's not corporate greed when we're talking about not only just freezing up pensions, but also saying we're going to eliminate a good chunk of jobs that now put you, somebody in my family, another person that works for them, went over to New York. And after her, I believe it was Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, was there for 2 months working. Now they're saying they're allocating them to contract workers.
If their reason for doing that is to give an extra $150 million a year to some CEO, then you have an argument. If their reason for doing that is their business model doesn't support paying out any more than they already are, and they're filling a funding gap that already exists in their pension, which they have been doing, then it's not that cut and dry.
Mm-hmm. I understand. It's just very hard to not look at the working man when you have a company that is continually bringing this to the table and not meeting the demands of union workers. And I am the first person to not be on the side of unions. I'm typically against this. But when I can analyze this story and see for what it's worth, I'm going to say it's corporate greed.
I absolutely get where the workers are coming from. I am 100% on the side of the workers, but I'm also 100% on the side of the corporation. You know, it's I'm on both sides with this one. This is precisely what sunk Polaroid. Was Polaroid, when they were kings of the world and printing money, gave out these very generous benefits packages,
mm-hmm.
including lifetime pension, including...
Well, essentially what they are promises, and you need to give your employee promises. That is what Verizon doing. They're trying to screw current retirees, and they've already done it to former retirees.
And it's the same thing that Polaroid had to do.
And taking away these promises. You sign up to work for this company, you work for over 25 years, you're told that you are going to get a lifetime worth of health care. Nope, sorry.
Well, it's because everybody lived too long. That's not your fault as a worker. It's everybody else's fault for living too long. If people would stop living so long.
That's crazy.
That's though. Not crazy.
No, it is.
That's the problem.
No, I understand. That's reality.
That's
but
the
to
problem.
Say, we'll just blame everybody that's living too long. Essentially, that's what's happening. But once promises are made, you have a contract. They cannot be broken.
The contract is only enforceable as long as the money is there. And if you're and look at what happened with Polaroid. Polaroid's gone now.
You really think Verizon is a situation where they're going to go bankrupt and they can't pay for it? Come on.
I think Verizon could find itself in a position where their broadband business becomes so unprofitable that it makes sense for them to sell it in its entirety to a third party that is geared entirely toward running broadband networks. If that happens, everybody who works there will be out of a job. And the union will be gone because that collective bargaining agreement exists between the union and Verizon Corporation.
But that is very highly unlikely considering we have in Boston a $300 million contract in multiple cities across the country. We also have multi-billion dollar contracts that are going in for Fios. So you're really telling me in the short term we're going to see Verizon possibly selling off? No, we're not.
This is
going to get worked out in the next couple months. And as you say, it's going to be kicked down more and more, and it's going to return in the next year or two.
I will tell you this. If I sit on a board of directors and my five-year projection for Verizon Broadband is that it's going to make a 2% profit, and my five-year projection for Verizon Wireless is that it's going to make a 30% profit, I will absolutely sell that division. I will get rid of that division in a heartbeat because my goal on the board is to make money for shareholders. That's why I'm there. And if I have an infrastructure-heavy, labor-heavy, legacy business, which is what Verizon Broadband is. Mm-hmm. It's old technology. This is the old American telephone and telegraph. It's their lines. That's who they used to be. And if I have that old legacy business sitting around, at a certain point, it makes sense just to sell the thing off. This is why the businesses are siloed and kept separate from each other.
No, so one doesn't get affected if
and this one... This is why you don't loan money from one to the other, mm-hmm. because if you loan money from one to the other and sell it, you lose that money. So there's a lot of factors here. And I would like to see the workers get, I would like to see that promise kept to the workers. What we are finding, not just with Verizon, not just with Polaroid, but in Puerto Rico, in the state of Puerto Rico, the promises that were made in the 80s and 90s, and certainly the 1970s about pension plans are being broken left and right because the money isn't there.
No, you have an island that is in so much debt.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And in the case of Puerto Rico, it's simple corruption and mismanagement that caused mm-hmm. that. In the case of Verizon, it is old technology that may be outliving its usefulness. Although everybody wants to have broadband. Someone could call you. Mark Zuckerberg wants to have a drone flying over your house, beaming Facebook at you with lasers.
Internet, yes.
Yeah. So if he pulls that off, Verizon's gone. You know, that whole piece of it's gone. Their cell phone business is still good, but the rest of it, forget about it. So I'm not necessarily chalking this up to greed. I think it's a little more complicated than that, just a tiny bit. National news breaking just. About an hour and a half ago, we found out about this. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control announced this evening that the Zika virus, I think it should be called the Seika virus. Men of a certain age know exactly what I mean about that. It's much less threatening and much more sexy if you call it the Seika virus. But this is serious, that the Zika virus is the definitive cause of microcephaly, a birth defect that leaves infants with undersized heads and incomplete brain development. CDC Director Thomas Frieden made the announcement in the New England Journal of Medicine, citing evidence from medical studies. The CDC reaffirmed its warning that pregnant women should stay away from countries such as Brazil, where Zika outbreaks are occurring, and there is some hope that this announcement will raise public awareness. Last week, the Associated Press reported that 40% of Americans know little to nothing about Zika. 40% know little to nothing about Zika.
And that's the thing. I mean, the more we learn, the worse it gets. And we were, you know, months ago when this first broke and we were talking about it on the show and understanding that this was a mosquito-borne illness that was, you know, transmitted from mosquitoes. It was only in Brazil, started moving through multiple parts of South America. We are now in a situation where it has gone to Central America and it is now here in the United States. Many people have contracted it, whether it be through traveling. We're getting to a point, and Brazil has come out and many other countries and saying, do not travel here if you are pregnant.
Well, Brazil hasn't said that.
I mean that.
Brazil has said, please come here. We're having the Olympics. they want you to come there.
Yeah.
The CDC has said, don't go there. The pregnant women, these are the CDC advisories. Pregnant women are advised not to travel to any country where there is currently an outbreak. That includes pretty much everything south of Mexico, in South America, to about Argentina.
And we're talking about also many states in the Gulf that are now seeing mosquitoes coming in and are infected with Zika.
Argentina and Peru are pretty much the only places you can go in South America. Stay out of most of the Caribbean. Hasn't been reported in Cuba yet. Stay away from Cape Verde. Stay away from the Virgin Islands. Venezuela, Fiji, the Marshall Islands. Nope, Cuba actually does have it. So don't go to Cuba if anybody wants to go to Cuba. The Dominican Republic, they've got it. Men who have been to these areas are advised not to have unprotected sex with women because Zika...
sexually transmitted.
...is a sexually transmitted disease. It hides in your little spermies and it comes out and infects... whoever you're with.
Now, I was going to say, Congress still has yet to approve the $1.8 billion appropriation that they have asked for. The Obama administration has come out to them. Basically, Congress has come back and said, well, we have still $550 million that we put aside for Ebola. You can use that up. And then we'll start talking about money again.
They're going to take that and they're going to spend that in the Gulf Coast to try and take care of Mississippi and Louisiana and Texas and those
states.
We're
starting to care about the poor people?
They don't have a choice because it'll become endemic down there if they don't. But even that is going to be more than likely, and not to freak people out about this, but it's going to be a losing battle.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we don't know for sure right now, we know that it's sexually transmitted. We know that it's transmitted through Aedes aegypti mosquito bites. We don't know if an infected person could be bitten by another type of mosquito, and then that mosquito can pass the infection on to someone else. If you think about it, there's a possibility that that could be the case.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, the projections that Zika will be in 23 southern U.S. states by the end of this summer is an underrepresentation of the actual public health crisis this presents. This is the biggest news story of a generation. I'm going to say that again, of a generation. This is something that you, if you are a sexually active person, if you are thinking of starting a family, if you are pregnant, if you seek to become pregnant in the next 5 years, you need to be aware of what's going on with this, because what they're looking at right now, some of the numbers that came out of Brazil, 30% of women in Brazil are infected with, who were infected with Zika, had babies with microcephaly.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a one-third...
That number is staggering.
That's a one-third chance if you get pregnant, or if you were pregnant and get bitten by a mosquito. Think about that. Just getting bitten by a mosquito. That is a one-third chance that you will have a baby with a severe birth defect and severe neurological injury. The estimated cost of caring for each one of these babies brought to term is $10 million U.S. Money that we don't have. If this thing goes the way that it could and the way that it looks like it might, we're going to be dealing with a public health catastrophe. And we're going to find ourselves having to answer some very, very hard questions about what you do. Because we can't afford $10 million.
Oh, no, absolutely. But, you know, Derek, you bring up that number about how many is it? 43% of Americans don't actually know about Zika.
Zika? What's Zika?
Yeah, I think for so long we were in a situation where a lot of people just assumed it's south of us. It's down in, you know, Central America, South America. It can't come up here because we're the United States. It's the same thing like Ebola. It can't come over here. It's, you know, in Western Africa. Well, it did. What the situation is with this is far different from what happened to Ebola, where you can be quarantined one single person for, say, 7 days and have the possibility of coming out from it. We were talking about something as simple as a mosquito bite, as you mentioned. Think about, you know, when you go out on a summer night, how many times you wake up in the morning and you have mosquito bites on you.
Yeah.
It's something as simple as that. How many women are in the United States in childbearing age are trying to have children?
Here are two things.
That's scary.
Here are two things that humanity has utterly failed to do in our modern history. Number one, eradicate mosquito populations. Number two, eradicate mosquito-borne illnesses. Every summer around here, we talk about the West Nile virus is back. The Eastern equine encephalitis is back. And it gets,
And you have a few cases that pop up here and there, but nothing.
And it gets 20 or 30 people. They got chikungunya down in the southern part of the United States this past year. Dengue fever is endemic in some parts of the world. With all of the precautions that you take, you are talking about a very small insect whose sole goal in life is to bite you and drink your blood. That's what it is on this planet to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it will stop at nothing to achieve that. And they breed anywhere they possibly can. Mosquito populations are insane in some parts. I mean, the Gulf Coast, you could spray all day long. I don't know that you're ever going to get rid of the mosquitoes. The other thing that becomes a possibility in all of this is, what do all of the young women in the southern United States do if they become pregnant, if they want to become pregnant? Are we going to get to a point where Zika becomes so endemic in certain parts of the country that the CDC moves them into northern parts of the country so that they can have their, so that they can complete a pregnancy without fear? And then you have a migrant situation like we have going over in Europe right now. There are so many.
Well, think about how many cities and towns rely on tourism in the Gulf area.
There's another aspect of this.
You're going to have towns that now nobody is traveling to. In the summer, a lot of people travel to the Gulf Coast, whether it be down in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi. It's not happening.
No. And there will be less of it. I mean, there's always going to be people who go. And, you know, another thing to consider, the furthest north the Aedes aegypti usually goes is Connecticut. If you have a really, really hot, humid summer, that range,
which we're supposed to,
that's on average, they go to Connecticut, that range extends, and that range extends out to Rhode Island, and it starts to creep up into maybe parts of Massachusetts and maybe parts of southern New Hampshire. People are moving around so much that all you need is a small number of mosquitoes in an area to start biting people, and if you've got infected people there, suddenly it takes hold.
Mm-hmm.
This, we generally think of the disease doomsday scenario in terms of some, you know, virus that's highly contagious. This is every bit as contagious during the summer months when everybody's outside.
And it carries around. It's very easily transmitted.
This is a story that is going to be dominating our headlines all summer long. And it is a story that if you are of a childbearing age, sexually active, thinking of having a family, it is a story that you need to pay a lot of attention to. The problem with the Zika virus is that it loves human nerve tissue. That's its favorite thing in the world. It loves to get into human nerve tissue and reproduce like crazy. And in developing fetuses, that prevents the nerve tissue and the brain from growing the way that they should. In adults, it triggers all kinds of neurological problems if you are susceptible.
No, absolutely. On Sunday, you had one of the Brazilian researchers, this actual research team, reported that two Zika patients had been other problems, brain inflammation, and could have some connection to multiple sclerosis. That's another possibility. Researchers also studying the connection between, I think it's Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Yes.
And that is a nerve condition that basically causes paralysis. That could be linked to Zika.
Sometimes temporary, sometimes permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And for an adult, permanently paralyzed, again, you're talking about millions of dollars in lifetime care. This is not playing around. This is not Ebola that's off in some foreign country and maybe it gets in here. And, you know, people were rightfully concerned about that. This thing is potentially worse.
And it's only the beginning, and it's just the start.
Yeah, we need a vaccine. That's the one thing that you're going to do to get this under control. We'll see what happens with that. In world news, Panamanian authorities raided the headquarters of Mossack Fonseca today, a day after Peruvian authorities raided offices in their country. Both the Panamanian and Peruvian authorities are seeking evidence of wrongdoing following the disclosure of 11.5 million documents to international journalists that detailed Mossack Fonseca's involvement in setting up offshore shell corporations to conceal the identities of asset owners and beneficiaries. Mossack Fonseca representatives continued to assert that no laws were broken. In a separate investigation, Panama's Intellectual Property Office spent much of Monday gathering evidence on the hack that first exposed the trove of documents.
It's so amazing to me that this company has been able to, and for the majority, a lot of the things they do are very legal. This is not a company that has not been red flagged as of recent. You know, back in 2012, 2013, British Virgin Island regulators, they actually fined the company for violating money laundering protections on several occasions. Last week, they raided the offices in San Salvador. We're talking about 20-something computers were seized. It blows my mind that this is still, like, federal prosecutors must be having a field day going through this and searching through the computers and knowing what is going to come out of it. And it is going to be troves of people that are involved in money laundering and illegal activity.
You know, it's funny. Last week we brought up two things. One was the lack of Americans on the Mossack Fonseca client
wondering
list.
Where they were, yes.
Thursday, suddenly lots of Americans showed up. And mm-hmm. We didn't do that. I'm not saying that. But the question was being raised.
Yeah.
And if you listen...
We could have done that.
I like to say, if you listen to the show, you're ahead of the curve. And sure enough, Thursday, names of Americans started popping mm-hmm. up on this list. The other thing that we brought up...
You would be naive to think that they were just not there.
The other thing we brought up last week was, are there any connections to the Clintons and to the Clinton Foundation? And yes, sure enough, on Thursday, people who were doing business with the Clinton Foundation, who were calling Huma Abedin and begging for time with Hillary Clinton, turns out own these shell corporations.
So weird.
Now, Mossack Fonseca...
You mean that people that are working with Hillary Clinton have these shell companies offshore where they secretly and, you know, skirt many tax laws and they hide millions of dollars, but also make it incredibly easy for these you know, tens of thousands of dollars to be transferred.
If it's good enough into... for the father of the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, it's good enough for everybody.
Mm.
But David Cameron wants more transparency.
Yes.
He wants people to pay their taxes.
It's so ironic when you build your entire campaign and your entire administration on going against these kind of people, and you're actually one of them.
It looks like Cameron's going to skate on that one, too, because they generally like Cameron over there. If Cameron had a lower popularity
just
rating...
just doesn't look good for the image.
Yeah, if Cameron had a lower popularity rating, and I think if he wasn't sort of hedging toward the Brexit, they'd probably be all over him about this. But the reality is, the other companies that have been taken down over the years were doing one of two things. They were either knowingly moving money from drug lords and international arms dealers and terrorists and other ne'er-do-wells from one corporation to another to launder it, or they were violating some international tax law. Mossack Fonseca actually didn't do either of those things.
And they're incredibly smart in how they operate their business.
They just set up the corporations. Mm-hmm. And they set up the corporations according to their very detailed understanding of international laws. They told a lot of people to go to Wyoming to set up their corporations in the U.S. because Wyoming doesn't care what you're doing.
No,
Nevada
absolutely.
Nevada doesn't care what you're doing.
This leak really has shown a light on the United States is actually a tax haven.
Yeah.
We have corporations and people that are millionaire billionaires that are using the United States, not these offshore islands. They're not going to the Seychelles. They're going to Nevada.
Why would you?
Because
the benefit of dealing with the United States is stability.
Mm-hmm.
We have a stable government that's not going to get overthrown next week. If you're dealing with one of these little island nations, particularly one that's sovereign, the odds of a military coup or a popular uprising or just general government corruption,
pretty good chance,
is very high. You know, it doesn't happen every single day, but governments in these island nations tend to turn over every 20 or 30 years, typically with a lot of violence.
Now, you say that Mossack Fonseca has the one way that they've gotten around this is because they didn't do the things that the companies that have already been taken down did.
They also
doesn't mean that they haven't. So when we talk about dealing with arms dealers, terrorists, Mossack Fonseca actually has connections to it. It's just not as blunt and out there.
But we know that because there are internal documents that came out last week in which directors of Mossack Fonseca or employees of Mossack Fonseca were basically saying, do you know who this is? With regard to people like Adnan Khashoggi, who was the arms dealer in the middle of the Iran-Contra.
Well, I mean, come on. When you have 65%
cash for hostages for guns exchange
of your clientele is coming out of the Middle East or coming out of these countries that, all right, let's look at North Korea, China, Russia. You think they're all up to good?
No.
No.
The thing that's ultimately going to hang them is it does appear that they were moving money back and forth between North Korea and Iran, which were both on the UN sanctions list. No one should have been doing business with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we know there's money moving in Iran and North Korea because they have things like tanks and nuclear centrifuges that cost money to get. So everybody's sitting around saying, where's the money coming from? Oh, it's these guys. And the simple act of doing business with those countries is enough to get you sanctioned or thrown in jail, depending on how aggressive international prosecutors want to be. So we'll see.
Well, today in sports, we learn new details help shed light on a murdered ex-football player. Former Saints defensive end Will Smith had a fully loaded handgun in his vehicle on the night he was killed, the New Orleans Police Department revealed on Tuesday. The New Orleans Police Department executed a search warrant on Smith's car Tuesday morning. The department also searched the vehicle of Cardell Hayes, the 28-year-old who has been accused of killing Smith. Detectives found a 9mm handgun inside of Smith's Mercedes. Although the gun was fully loaded, the NOPD did point out that there was no ballistic evidence to suggest it had been fired. It is still unknown who owned the gun inside of Smith's car. There were a total of 4 people inside the vehicle on the night of Smith's death: Smith, his wife, and 2 other passengers. Smith's wife, Raquel, was shot in the leg while the 2 other passengers came unharmed. As for Hayes' vehicle, police found a loaded revolver that wasn't fired on the night of Smith's death. The only other gun found on the scene was a .45 caliber handgun that Hayes allegedly shot to shoot Smith. Now, I remember hearing this story initially when I came out, understanding that a former Saints football player had been shot. He did die. Kind of, how
I just heard
this...
Will Smith is dead. I'm like, oh no, no more Men in Black movies.
But,
you know,
you heard it was over a dispute of...
Fender bender.
Road rage.
Yeah.
If you look at any of the surveillance cameras that were from the surrounding, and they actually have a couple locations, in one of the cafes, surveillance reveals the man who shot Smith had a Hummer H2. Behind him, Smith's car was a Mercedes SUV. You see Smith's car hit the Hummer, or tap it, just as if you were looking at your phone, not paying attention, give it a little tap. Hummer pulls over to the side. The Mercedes goes around the Hummer and speeds away. Clearly, you know what the situation is now when the Hummer is speeding away, chasing Smith's car. He's going after him. Apparently, he then bumped into the Mercedes, gets out of the car. They have an exchange of words. There are witness accounts of saying that Smith in the car did mention he had a gun. We are now in a situation of, is this defense? Or, of course, the defense is going to use it. No, but you had a guy that ran up to it. You hit my car. He's mad. Popped him off.
These guys are beefing all the way down Bourbon Street. And Hayes, it was known to be a somewhat loose character in New Orleans. A kid that grew up in the projects, tried to make the NFL, had a reputation for being involved in drugs, had a reputation for being violent. 2 people in the wrong place at the wrong time.
No, of course. And not that I'm going to take anything away from somebody and their reaction to a situation of a man coming up to their car with a gun. But if you have your wife in the car, I'm sure there is a situation where you want to protect her. But just because he mentions the word gun doesn't mean that he was talking about his gun. It could have been a conversation, put the gun down, whatnot. So I understand what eyewitnesses were possibly hearing.
He never showed the gun. He never pointed the gun at anyone. Hayes gets out and starts shooting at the car. So I don't know how threatened you feel when you're behind the wheel of a vehicle that someone's walking away and getting into their car, that you have to get out and shoot them. Maybe he thought he was going back to the car to get the gun. Look, he's going away for murder. That simple. He's going away for murder. It'll be murder too.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, today in food news, we learned it's not only the calories in fast food that should scare you. The next time you add fries to your burger, you may almost be adding extra chemicals. A new study found that people who are eating more fast food had higher levels of phthalates and than non-consumers, suggesting the quick eats may expose diners to potentially harmful chemicals. The study published Wednesday in the Environmental Health Perspectives used data from 8,877 participants of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. The group of all ages, 6 years or older, which was a sample size large enough to reasonably reflect the U.S. population, researchers noted that about 1/3 of the study group reported eating some sort of fast food in the last 24 hours. Fast food included processed or packaged food, carryout or delivery food, and food obtained from restaurants without a waiter-specific location. Participants reported on their diet in the last 24 hours, provided urine samples, which were tested for the breakdown of product in 2 specific phthalates, DEHP and DINP. People with a higher consumption of fast food had 23.8 higher percent levels of the breakdown product for DEHP and nearly 40% higher than in the DINP metabolites.
Simple solution. ban phthalates in food grade plastic. That's where it's coming from.
That is where it's coming from. And they are often used, I mean, not only in a variety of consumer products, which include like shampoos, adhesive, but one of the biggest things is packaging of the food.
Yeah.
And it seeps into it.
Yeah.
Now we have a problem where
we've known this for years. This isn't new. That's why we got it out of baby bottles.
But these are the highest numbers that they've been seeing in a survey group. We're talking about, no, not, you know, 5-6% here and there. In one, 23.8%. In another, 40% higher. Chemicals going into your body. So people are wondering why you can't get pregnant and people's bodies are so messed up. It's because of this. This is one of the many reasons. Also, possibly has links, and many of these cases have been done with lab rats, but the male reproductive system. There are some cases where in human studies it has shown that. Another possibility.
I would expect that the working theory on it was that the absorption of phthalates would be so low if you were talking about something like a 10-gallon bucket of pickles or ketchup or flour or any of that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. that it wouldn't have an impact on people. Now that we know that it does, let's get the FDA on the case and go back to the industry and say no more plastics that secrete phthalates in food containers. Food grade plastics must be 100% phthalate free or you cannot use them. End of story. This is what we have a government for.
Mm.
And this should take all of about a week to pass and 6 months to implement.
I don't know what more you want from these stories. And when we hear this is putting chemicals in our body. We'll do something about it. I mean, this is why we have the FDA.
Oh, something's being done about it. The plastics industry has read the report and gone out and spent $1 million on lobbyists, is what's happened. So that
have
they
signed on for the Clinton campaign? Have they talked to her yet?
They're making political donations so that they can cut the coming regulations off at the path because it's going to make them a penny per package less profitable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening right now. I've told you what should happen. FDA should pass a rule. No phthalates in food-grade plastic. End of story. Not hard to do. We'll see.
And it can be stopped.
20 years from now, we'll still be talking about this, Lisa. Or at a minimum, 5. In technology news, it emerged that the FBI paid hackers to unlock the iPhone owned by Santa Barbara shooter Syed Farouk and not the Israeli firm Cellebrite, as some industry watchers speculated. The hackers gave the FBI a previously unknown exploit that allows an iPhone 5C running iOS 9 to be cracked, information the FBI could now use to conduct surveillance on all similar devices. The arrangement shines a light on the shadowy world of gray hat hackers who discover security vulnerabilities and offer them to the highest bidders, and also raises the question of whether the FBI has a responsibility to disclose their findings to Apple so that the security flaw can be fixed.
They're never going to do it.
They absolutely will not do that. And Apple can go sue them all day long. And they will come back and they will say, it is a matter of national security that we are able to get past this encryption or any encryption.
Mm-hmm. Now, the way that they actually did it was by making multiple copies of the actual chip.
We don't know that.
That's what was assumed.
When Cellebrite was involved in this, it was known that Cellebrite had the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was suggested that they might have had the ability to just mirror the flash drive, create a virtual version of it that you could then mess around with all day long. But they weren't involved in this. Everybody thought they were involved in this.
Because from what we understood was the iPhone is impenetrable. You can't get in.
Right.
There's no way. What we had was FBI saying, well, we want the key. We want the key to the back door, which not just for that one single phone. It's for every single phone. This is what consumers pay Apple for. A product that they feel secure with. Now you understand that the FBI is going out and paying a hacker.
This is where you get into some very, very thorny issues about what the relationship between the government and private industry is and ought to be. Because The FBI now has a way to crack any iPhone 5C that it wants to, because it knows about an exploit that Apple does not know about. Now, there is also nothing to stop these hackers from turning around and selling that, because they've basically advertised to the world, we can crack an iPhone 5C. So there may be some people in China that would like to have that. There may be some people in Russia or Ukraine or Nigeria that would like to have that.
Oh, and everything's worth a price.
So that they can write a virus that will crack these things open and take all of the data.
Do you honestly think that there is only one sole hacker living in this world right now that can't also do it?
Very possibly there is, because the type of crack that we're talking about is something that takes a solid working knowledge of how the system works and hours, weeks, months, sometimes years of detective work. You've got to be very creative in figuring out how to break the thing. Somebody did it. The fact that one person did it doesn't exclude the possibility that other people have also done it, but it is very, very unlikely that a lot of people have figured this thing out.
Do you think it's more likely that this person is coming from working at Apple or working on the product or understanding the product? Because, I mean, the only way that you understand it so much is if you've previously worked on it.
You know, that's
creating it.
McAfee said, was it McAfee or Norton?
McAfee came out and said, we can crack it if the FBI wants us to. We can figure it out.
McAfee said that that Apple wouldn't be happy about that. He knew who was supplying the solution and that Apple wouldn't be too happy about it. So this may be former Apple engineers or people who have previously broken Apple's encryption.
Mm-hmm.
There is this whole realm of people out there that just hack professionally. And they find these things, and you can do a couple of things once you find it. You can report it to a company and hope they'll pay you for it. And a lot of tech companies do. They're called bug bounties. And bug bounties can be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is why some of these guys do this. Others will just turn around and sell it to the underworld and say, hey, you can get in all of these right now.
Well, that's what's
because
scary.
Because you're
going to
get hundreds of thousands of dollars.
The FBI sells it as, well, we are just trying to figure out about these terrorist cells. We're trying to protect Americans. But you almost feel like FBI should be telling Apple how this is done so it can be fixed.
Well,
because essentially what you're trying to do is also protect the consumers from not being hacked. So the person in China doesn't do it. Well, it's like, FBI, hey, we have a fault in our system. Tell us what it is.
There,
that would never happen, but
there is. This is WMFO Medford. I need to say that. There is a fundamental conflict here if you are the FBI. Because on the one hand, you want that back door into these devices, mm-hmm, so that you can protect the public from terrorists, international drug cartels, organized crime, local drug dealers, maniacs, all the people who use cell phones to harm others or in the planning stages of their crimes. On the other hand, a hack that steals everybody's personal information and leads to millions of dollars in fraud also harms the American people. So as a law enforcement agency, you have an obligation to protect the American people from that. Which one carries the greater weight? We know, as far as James Comey is concerned, and the current FBI and the current Justice Department, whatever gets them into the back of the device, whatever opens that back door for them, is more important
absolutely
than protecting the public at large.
They say